Power Trip After Party Podcast, presented by Bud Light Seltzer. Available now in the podcast section of the iHeartRadio app and on KFAN.com.
Hello, this is Jeremiah.
Jeremiah, this is Golden Gopher Football. We're here to tell you that we're going to stomp your asses this year into the ground. We're just calling you randomly just to let you know that we're bringing the beat down from
the
great city of the Twin Cities to stomp those Cornhuskers into the ground.
Oh, my gosh. It's good to hear your guys' voices.
Hi, bud.
Yeah.
How are you, man?
I'm good. I miss you guys. How are you guys doing?
We're good. Do you hear us okay? Does everything sound okay in yours?
Yeah.
Okay,
I can hear you guys just fine.
That's great.
Let's get the congrats out of the way first and foremost. I see a little baby in those arms.
Yes, so we got a three-week-old little girl that is Aylin. Aylin's born, so we're running around with her. And then we decided to go full crazy and last week bought an eight-week-old puppy. So It is very much chaos around the house right now.
What kind of a dog?
Wow.
Half black lab, half golden retriever. It's our third dog. So
very progressive of you.
Yes, very much so. We're on the cutting edge. It's crazy.
That's awesome.
Speaking of crazy, Jeremiah, it's Meat Sauce. How are you?
Hi, buddy.
How often do you ride the Peloton?
Probably 4 or 5 days a week.
Man, you look great. How much weight have you lost, dude?
So at my lowest, I've gotten down to about 280, so about 40 pounds.
Wow.
I'd like to get down to 270, kind of where I'd like to sit and feel better at that. But, I mean, just walking around at 280, like my knees, hips, everything just feels so much better.
Yeah, you're 6'6", right?
Yeah.
Holy crap. You're a foot taller than me, and we weigh the same. No, I'm just kidding.
Brilliant.
But you're a lot better looking, Og.
Oh, stop it. Well, that's cool, man. Congratulations. So, obviously, we got a million different things we want to talk to you about, and the last thing I want to talk to you about is about all those chicken nuggets you ate. But for everybody out there who is unfamiliar and doesn't follow you on Twitter or whatever, tell everybody what you've been doing since you left the Vikings and, obviously, football.
So I retired in 2019 and then moved, had surgery, came back to Nebraska, stayed here, and then now I'm actually working to become an NFL sports agent. It's kind of the career path in which I'm working towards. I'll get to take the test in July to get certified and then hopefully help represent guys coming out of college going into the NFL. And one of the main reasons I wanted to get into that was just to help guys. I mean, I saw so many guys that were insanely talented, but surrounded themselves with the wrong circle as they got into the league, and their entire career derailed before it even got started. So the NFL did so much for me and able to support my family and build a life that I want to make sure that I can help other kids do that as well. And it's a way for me to use my PhD that I got in football. So going to do that in July. And then I also work for the Husker Sports Network here in Nebraska, covering the Husker football team. So I hope we can be a little bit better this year and talk about some wins instead of just winning three games over and over and over again.
Jeremiah, as you were talking about the NFL draft stuff, Is one of the things that you would like to have some of these players get to know that, you know, you don't have to go out your junior year. And, you know, and as you just said, you get a lot of these guys that come out and maybe they're told their first or second round picks, then they go in like the fifth or sixth round. Is that something you'd like to educate people on?
Yeah, so I think that that's an extremely important thing to talk with guys about. But what's crazy, Sauce, is the way that the new CBA has been set up, and we're going to see a ton more of it next year, with the rookie minimums going up the way that they're going to over this new CBA, it doesn't really entice a lot of guys to stay in for that extra year if they even have any draft eligible grade. So say you're going to be a third or fourth round pick as a junior. You're going to make probably a couple hundred in a signing bonus, and then you're going to make $660,000 as a rookie. And then your second year, you're going to make $880,000. I mean, that's stuff that, like, for when I got in, that's double what my rookie salary is. And so you're telling guys, like, hey, even if you're a six-round pick, you're going to make $1.5 million in 2 years versus stay in school one more year and you might lose out on that $880,000 because you might go up one more round, two more rounds, and get another $100,000 as a signing bonus. So the economics of it all is really going to change, but I still think there's something to be said about juniors staying in school, making sure you're physically ready for the NFL, because it's just such a jump of if you're a young guy, I mean, especially young juniors, that are 20, 19. I mean, the Neil Hunters of the world are just insane, right? But if you're young, I think it's important to physically develop before you get to the NFL and mentally.
So, Jeremiah, what if one of your first clients says, I want to get paid in crypto and I want to invest in NFTs? What do you tell them?
Hey, if you can get in Bitcoin, I'm all in. I'm a Bitcoin believer. I got some Bitcoin. Stephen Weatherly back in 2017 actually was the one that got me involved with Bitcoin. And he got like the whole locker room. He was like preaching about it. And all of us like, you're an idiot. This is stupid. And then all of us bought in and then kind of just sat on it. And then all of us, I remember I texted him like 2 months ago. I was like, hey, thanks for telling me to buy that weird thing back in a few years back. I think it can work out for me. But hey, man, if you can get paid in Bitcoin, go for it.
Yeah, didn't Russell Okung do that?
Yeah, he made half his salary, which is now almost like tripled his yearly salary.
Wow, good for him.
So help us settle the debate that we saw that you chimed in on a little bit on Twitter that you don't believe Rashad Bateman's going to be a first round pick.
I don't. I don't think Bateman's going to be a first round pick just based off of the stock of receivers that there are this year. I think that there's so many good receivers, and it's a weird year along the ways, too, as far as, like, everyone had a really good pro day, right? Like, I don't think anyone was like, wow, that receiver had a really terrible pro day. And so you're looking across at the top board, and I could see him maybe going late first, but I think that there's a lot of needs that people need to fill outside of the wide receiver position after the top four or five guys that get drafted. So I think he's probably a second or third round pick unless some team absolutely just falls in love with him and who he is as a player.
If you could, what would be the number one offensive lineman you would take in this draft?
So Penny Sewell from Oregon is by far the most talented offensive lineman that I've seen coming out of college in probably the last decade. Yeah. And again, he's one of those guys that we talk about that's young, right? Say that again.
Oh, no, Hockey just said
I was like, wow, yeah.
Yeah, so he's 20 years old. He can play any spot. He's 330 pounds. He ran like a 5.1 at his pro day. He broad jumped almost like 10 and a half feet. I mean, he's an absolute freak specimen. And he's another one of those guys that I wish he would have played last year. He did sit out for the year. I think him playing last year would have been good for his development. But when you get told you're a top five pick, it's kind of hard to come back for a COVID season that you didn't even know was going to happen or how it all was going to go down. But I really like him. I like Rashawn Slater out of Northwestern. I think that he's a really solid player, too. And then a guy that I really like that's probably going to be a late first, maybe early second, is Dylan Raddins out of North Dakota State. He can play all five positions, but he really is just very athletic, and he had a really good showing down at the Senior Bowl as well.
Got any other draft questions for him or not?
I can, but I didn't. So, yeah.
We want to talk Nuggets, so get your draft stuff out of the way.
So, last one for you, Jeremiah. Do you think your former team, the Minnesota Vikings, have to go offensive lineman at 14?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know. They've addressed just about every other need that they have throughout the free agency process, and then they missed out on a bunch of, I mean, I heard they were heavy in on Joe Thuney. They obviously didn't get him. Sorry if you can hear my little man running around. He's being a psycho. But I think that they absolutely need to address it early. I think that it's definitely one of those things that unless you are 100% sold on Ezra Cleveland playing left tackle, which I watched every game last year, I am not, then you absolutely need to draft a left tackle to put out there. Maybe not a day one starter, but someone that you can see by the end of his first year being a starter at the tackle position, because unless they're going to do what they always do and they draft someone and like, hey, we're going to move him inside the guard, or we're going to move this guard to center, or we're just going to flip-flop all these positions around, I think you need to go find a main staple left tackle in this draft.
And lastly, besides Trevor Lawrence, who do you think will have the best career at the quarterback position in this draft?
Man, that's a tough one. I don't know. I think I want to say Justin Fields just because he gives me kind of a Russell Wilson vibe, the way that he can play and the way that he can run and he can move. But I don't know, man. There's so many good quarterbacks in this draft, but I really think Justin Fields has the intangibles to go out there and really show what he can do and be a leader of a franchise.
Thanks, babe.
Yeah, there you go. So, Jeremiah, here we go.
Yes.
Away from football just for a moment.
Yes.
Let's go number one. Well, I guess this is kind of football. I think it's interesting. I didn't know until just now, but you're from the exact same high school as our receiver, B.C. Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever spoken to him? Did you know of him before he was a college and or professional football player? Was he somebody that was big in your hometown?
Yeah, so I knew of him based off of when I catch up with Bear Creek football, or when I'd watch, just kind of see the highlights. I heard about him. Then I know he went to Colorado State. Then when he went to the Vikings, I actually got a chance to meet him when I was up there rehabbing from my ankle injury at Training House right across the street from the facility there. We just happened to bump into each other at one point. Got to meet him, and we follow each other on Instagram now, and he's a great kid. I really hope that he has some continued success in the NFL, but yeah, he's a really cool dude.
What is your degree in from the Nebraska that makes it so that you want to be an agent?
So my degree is in business management, entrepreneurship.
Hmm.
But the biggest thing for me is, I tell people, is I've got a 6-year postgraduate degree in football.
Yeah.
And my wife told me right away that I'm not allowed to coach or else she'd leave me. So didn't go into that. And so we're going to go ahead and just work with the agent because it's a way for me to stay around the game and it's a way for me to mentor young kids still. I know I say kids, these kids are 20, but they really are when they're coming into the league, and help guys have continued success and make a pretty good living doing it.
So does your wife not want you to get into coaching because of the hours or because of the travel, because of the moving? What is the main...
All the above.
How is that different than being an agent, though? Isn't agents' life kind of hectic, too? That's a lot of hours as well, is it not?
It is. There's definitely going to be periods in which I'm very busy. Free agency, you're going to be very busy. Recruiting in the summer, you're going to be busy. But really in the fall, when all your guys are hopefully on rosters or you're working a couple days a week to get guys on rosters, you got some appearances, like it's not a super grinding schedule like that versus a coach where you got a cot in your office because you work 22 hours, then you sleep for two, and then you do it all over again. And a lot of it, too, is I watched one of my mentors and one of my favorite coaches, Coach Tony Sperano, work himself to death. I watched how much he worked and how hard he put every single thing he had into his players and into his coaching staff. And I mean, he died young of a heart attack, and seeing that. And then I have one of my offensive line coaches from college who has a heart problem. And he was the same way. He was just a workaholic. And so watching some of those guys that are 50, 60 years old have the health issues that they do, I know it's not all because of coaching, but I mean, you're just not, you don't live a super healthy lifestyle as a coach.
Mm.
Yuck.
And people can show you the money when you're an agent. I mean, I get that. That makes perfect sense to me. When you were going into the NFL draft, did you go to Indianapolis for the combine, or did you just do a pro day?
No, I didn't get invited to the combine. I just did a pro day. My first combine experience was I went 2 years ago with my agent. I shadowed my agent and went to the combine there.
What's it like for non-football people and non-media people?
So talking to a few buddies that went to the combine, they're like, dude, it's like an absolute stress test of just trying to like wear your ass out the entire day and then do a quick like, hey, go run this 40 and perform peak performance as fast as you can without hurting yourself. And I mean, it's really, the combine is so much more mental than it is physical. And I think people watch and tune into the combine, they're like, wow, this guy ran really well, or that guy ran really poorly. And you're seeing it this year, kind of like I talked about earlier, like how good everyone's pro day is. It's because pro day, there's no stress like the combine is. You weren't up till 3 a.m. getting medical images, meeting with different teams, going playbooks, and you get 15-minute meetings. You're just really out there, you run, and you're done. And so I think the biggest thing that teams are worried about when they don't get to interview guys at the combine is they don't see how guys really perform under that stress that is the combine. But the best way I can describe the combine is it's speed dating for football players, right? It's, hey, you get 15 minutes with this organization, 15 minutes with this organization, and then they have to make an opinion about you and decide if they want to invest millions of dollars into you or not. And, I mean, you see it, people hit and miss on all the time. I mean, that Isaiah Wilson guy from the Titans is a perfect example, right? Something they missed in that draft process of like, this dude's a first-round pick. Yeah, on the field, absolutely. But the NFL is so much more than just how they perform on the field. It's all about off-the-field stuff. How do they handle themselves? And that's all the kind of crap that you find out at the combine.
Which leads me to my question about a former teammate of yours. In fact, I believe the one of the first games you got in and played at left guard was when Alex Boone went down because of a hip injury in 2016. Does that guy get a bad rap because from a fan's perspective, seemed like he wasn't very well liked within the locker room. Is that fair or not?
No, you know, Boone was an acquired taste, and he was one of the guys that I latched onto because when he got there, he was kind of like, okay, he's been where I want to go. right? He was the first guy that really came in, played the same position, and he taught me how to work, and he taught me how to be in there early and do all those things. But he was also one of those guys that he was going to speak his mind no matter what, and that sometimes got him in trouble. And, you know, the way that it goes in the NFL, I tell people this all the time, there's a very delicate balance. There's a scale, if you can picture it, where as long as your on-field performance outweighs the other stuff off the field of distractions or in the locker room or noise or anything, there will always be a way for them to make it work. But the second that scale tips in the other direction of your play is now less than what your off-the-field stuff is, they get you out of there real quick. And I think that happened with Boone with a couple of his injuries, some of the stuff that went down. His play diminished, and so they just didn't put up with his mouth anymore. And you see that all across the league, right? Antonio Brown's a perfect example, too. Dude's unbelievably talented, but when the off-the-field stuff just outweighs that, then you just can't do it. And, I mean, it goes for the good ways, too, right? Tim Tebow. He was pretty good, but his on-field performance was not as was less than his off-the-field performance, whether it was about Christianity or whatever he was doing. It was more of a distraction than his performance was. Same thing with Colin Kaepernick, right? No one wants to touch that with the uncertainty of what his play might look like. And so people just have to understand that that's what the NFL is about, is that delicate balance all the time.
Listen, these guys, these two have to leave real quick, so we got to talk to you about the chicken nugget thing. So tell me, what went down with the chicken nuggets on Twitter? Tell me about that.
Yeah, so my neighborhood here, we got really close over COVID, and all of us decided that we were just hanging around a fire pit one night, and we had a few pops, a few Busch Lights, and one of my neighbors was like, I think I could eat more chicken nuggets than you. And I basically was like, you're an idiot. Like, there's absolutely no chance you can eat more chicken nuggets. He's like, no, I've had to get a lot of chicken nuggets for my kid because I get the Pokemon cards. So I mean, like 30 nuggets a day. I was like, okay, first of all, that's really lame. And second, you still cannot eat more chicken nuggets than me. So our other neighbor was like, screw it. I'll buy 200 nuggets. You guys can have the nugget eating championship here in my garage. So we decided to, on a Sunday night, get the nugget eating championship. And I knocked down 76 chicken nuggets to his 50. And I probably could have hit 100 if I wanted to, but I decided not to hate myself more than I did.
Well, and how long did it take you to eat that much?
40 minutes.
40
minutes.
I got
76 nuggets in 40 minutes.
76. So, wow. We have Tommy Olsen as a part of the show every week here, and I'm going to present this this challenge to him tomorrow to see if he thinks he can beat that number, because that's a pretty good number.
Yeah, he's a former lineman, too. I bet he might be able to.
Yep. He's just like you, though. He's all slimmed down.
Yeah, but you still have that extra gear. When the competition kicks in, you can expand that stomach.
A couple of things before I let you go. So tell me about life after football for you. Obviously, you got a lot going on. You got a family. Everything's good. You're working in the radio. You're heading towards a different career. But you spent your entire life playing football, and then you retire, and you're trying to start all over. How's that been for you?
It's been good. The first year was really hard. I'm not going to lie to you. The first year of when you realize that football season is over for you. I mean, it is really done. It is never going to happen again. It was really hard. And I actually, I don't tell this story much, but when I was having my ankle surgery, I was in Minnesota for rehab, and I went to a Vikings game. Emma wanted to go, my wife and a couple buddies. So I was like, yeah, I can get tickets and we can go. And it was about probably like middle of the season. And I walked in and we're sitting there at pregame and the national anthem comes and I stand up and then the gallop horn blows and all of a sudden I'm like, my heart's racing and like my blood's pumping and I'm like, what's going on? Like, and I was having like not PTSD, but like my body was like, hey, it's football time. Like, it's time to roll. Like, in my, I kicked into that like time and like I had to go up and like walk the concourse and calm myself down. And that was my first realize of like, this is really going to be hard. And watching football on Sunday was really hard for me for a long time too. I couldn't really watch games. I was getting anxiety about it. I was getting kind of like worried and down. And then eventually you just kind of work through that. And you know, you can rely on my faith and I can rely on my family. And I was able to work through that. But it's definitely something that I think guys definitely have to understand there's resources available. Because it can get lonely and it can get dark, especially if you don't have the support system, because that's your whole life is in segments, right? Off-season, OTAs, yeah. Summer, training camp, season, and you just repeat the cycle. And when that ends, it's really hard to break.
How are you physically? Obviously, we know about your foot ankle injuries, but outside of that, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. I train high school kids here at a gym, so I work out four or five times a week with my buddy at the gym there, and I'm actually getting back my strength and trying to, again, I don't want to get skinny just to be skinny. I kind of still want to be bigger and stronger. So we still lift quite a bit, and then the Peloton keeps me in good shape because, you know, if I want to live longer, I got to keep this heart healthy.
Yeah, no doubt about that. 28 years old and starting a second career as well. You're suddenly at home all the time. You've been training. You've been playing football your entire life. When you look back, though, at your football career, is there one time of your life that stands out as being the best part of your football career?
I think the best part of honestly would have been that 2017 season. Mm-hmm. And I think that I was coming off a 2016 season where I played a lot of football for the Vikes. I mean, I know we went 8-8, but I think I started 12 or 13 games. And going into that season, I just loved that locker room. I loved the guys that were, like, in that O-line room. And it was fun. Now, granted, we won 13 games, which definitely makes things a lot more fun than winning 8. But it was just something that was so special. And there's so many memories from that year. I mean, I still get people that send me the videos of the Brian Robinson 96 questions from that year that are like, dude, this looks like you guys had so much fun. And that's what it was. It was just a super fun year of football. So that 2017 football season with the Vikes was incredible.
Tell me about playing for Mike Zimmer.
It's not for everyone. Zimmer is, he's a tough, hard-nosed coach, but you know that he's going to expect the best out of you. And the sooner that you can understand that that's what he expects and to have thick skin, the easier it's going to be for you. But now, as a young guy coming in, that's really hard, especially when you were the man in college. And you get there and you've got a coach now who, if you don't perform, he's going to absolutely let you know it. And that's just how he is. That's how he always is, and that's how he's always going to be. But he's a genius when it comes to the defensive side of the football. I still, his blitz schemes and the way that he can disguise things is still one of the more impressive things that I break down week in and week out. And you could really see, though, that he needs all his chess pieces in order to make his defense go. And so I think sometimes when people are like, why was the defense so bad? I was like, well, he's playing chess with checker pieces. Right, like that's just how Zimmer is, but he's an absolute genius on the defensive scheme side of the football.
When you were there, Kevin Stefanski was still a quarterback's coach. Fast forward a couple of years, he's almost made it to the Super Bowl as the head coach of the Browns. Does that surprise you?
It does a little bit, and the reason I said is he was just very quiet. I was honestly, obviously, I was never in a meeting room like one-on-one with him, but I just remember him being very quiet, very reserved, and I was like, you know, I wonder how that, especially when he went to the Browns, I was like, that's a a lot of big personalities in that room. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on in there. And so I was curious as far as how that was going to go. But I think that was almost perfect for that of the calm amongst the storm, right? The steady figure. I think that that's what he is and the work he's done there. And he's got some killer offensive linemen up front, which has really helped him with his run game. And it doesn't hurt to have Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt toting the rock for you back there. So I'm excited for him, man. I'm really hoping that he can be the guy that brings the Browns back for multiple years here.
Did Case Keenum ever get a real shot to be a starting quarterback?
He did. He got one in Denver. He got a chance to be a starting quarterback in Denver. Now, that team wasn't very good all around in 2018 when he went there, but he had his opportunity to go out there, and that's what the NFL is all about, is taking advantage of your opportunities. And he went out there, and he didn't have a stellar showing. I mean, I don't think he was necessarily awful, but I do think that people that were crying for Case to come and be the starting quarterback for Minnesota really didn't see that there was really just the perfect storm for him to be able to walk in there and be able to do those things. And it's a very different world when you're QB1 from basically April on, and there's a lot more pressure, a lot more game planning that goes against you from defenses. So I don't necessarily think he was the best quarterback option for Minnesota, but he definitely had an opportunity when he went in Denver.
And last thing, as a GM, obviously, Spielman catches hell around here quite a bit. Ups and downs, this, that, and the other, we can all say a little bit of something, but from somebody who played for him, your thoughts on Rick Spielman?
I like Rick. Rick was always very upfront with me. He very much, even when I got released, he told me why and why it was going on, and it was a business decision. It was nothing personal, and I can respect that. And I know that sometimes that being a GM, you get the target painted on your back a lot because you end up making a lot of those personnel decisions. But I think that between him, Zimmer, they've done a nice job. I will say the loss of George Payton is going to put a lot more on Spielman's plate. And I'm curious to see how he handles that or if he kind of delegates that more to his staff.
Okay, I lied to you. One last thing, Jeremiah Searles. Tell me your thoughts on PJ Fleck.
He's a good coach, but I just don't buy his stick. I think it's kind of fake. I think that it's not necessarily the realest thing in the world, but if it gets your players to buy into it, then your players buy into it. But I can't get behind the rah-rah stuff that he does and his vocabulary, and it kind of drives me up the wall.
You can be my agent if you'd like, but I'm only 5'6", and I'm 50 years old.
That's fair. I'll take you. I'll sign you right now.
It's good to talk to you, man. Go take care of that baby before your wife drives here and beats me up for keeping you on the phone so long.
No worries, guys. It was great talking to you guys. We'll
talk to you, my friend. See you later. Thanks.
Later.